Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on our show, we have Kate Miller-Wilson. Hi, Kate.
Hey.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm obsessed with your large format work, so we can't wait to talk about all the things large format. But before we get into it, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners who may not know you and tell us how you got into photography?
Sure. I'm Kate Miller-Wilson. I live in Minnesota. I photograph mainly as, well, I don't like the word hobby about photography because I feel like it is really more of a lifestyle. It ends up becoming part of my entire life. Yeah. So I don't do it professionally anyway. But I started out as a kid. I was really into the family photos that my grandpa had, that his mom had taken. So these are like, you know, 1920s. Wow. Lots and lots, like hundreds of them. Wow. And she was really into it. And I used to sit with him and talk about the pictures and who was in it. And I always got the sense of her, even though my great grandmother who took the pictures wasn't really in many of them, I could feel her there. You know, I felt like I got to know her that way, and I'd never met her.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was sort of a thing. It was like a big thing for me as a kid, but I didn't really do that much with photography growing up. I had, you know, a couple point and shoot cameras with 120 film, and it was, you know, I had to use my own money to buy the film and develop. So, you know, I took pictures of my sister and stuff like that, but it wasn't something that I really used as a form of creative expression. But my dad had a Nikon and he took a lot of pictures of us. And that sort of also stuck in my mind as something just really cool. And like that you could go beyond the standard documenting your family, you know, events like birthday parties, but also have like sort of everyday photos and play around with it. And that was really fun to see and to be a part of with him. Mm. I didn't really do a lot of photography stuff other than that. I was really creative. I really liked writing. I liked sewing and making like pioneer dresses as a kid.
Wow.
You know,
cool.
In my bedroom. That was the big creative outlet. But then I went to college, majored in English, did a lot of creative writing, and really started to find a voice that way with words more than pictures for a long time.
Always jealous of that. I wish I could write. It's always one thing. I'm terrible at it.
It's just, you know, it's another way of expressing the same thing, I think. Like, you know, mm-hmm. who you are, and do that with photos. You can do it with writing. Lots of ways. Yeah. But so I worked as a writer, and then I had kids, and that's sort of when I started to take pictures myself. And first it was just like, I want to get the big events and, you know, Halloween, Christmas and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then I got my first DSLR. So I started with digital, and I got like obsessed. So it was digital. I don't shoot digital anymore, or only like, you know, on family vacations or whatever, but it was a really good way to learn, because you get the instant feedback of, you know, this is my exposure, this works, this doesn't work. So I was taking like 200 or 300 photos a day and trying it's just crazy. But trying to capture, I think, the idea of like how it is when you remember something. So it's not just, you know, this is what happened. It's like, this is how it felt, or this is, you know, even just a blurred background and the subject sharp with a bokeh. It's like, that's sort of how we think of things when we remember back, or how we sort of focus on people or events. And I was kind of chasing that right away. But that was, so it was lots of photos. And after a couple of years of doing that, I had a lot of pressure on myself somehow. Like, I was doing a 365 project, and so a photo every day, but it wasn't just any photo. It had to be like an art photo, and it started to get to be like work. Like, it wasn't, I sort of was losing some of the joy. At the same time, I was looking at a lot of photos. Lots, you know, we all get, there's so much. And there I is. Was really... really drawn to film, really drawn to large format right away. And, you know, Sally Mann, and just all of the things that make large format special, the sort of 3D quality. And I really wanted to start it, but I didn't feel like I should jump right into that from digital. So I got medium format first. I got a Mamiya C330, which was a hard adjustment for me, because with the waist level viewfinder, and
it's totally different
crazy now. I mean, everything I see is, you know, through a large format viewfinder now. Ground glass. But it was like really strange how things were reversed. And I would remember trying to like follow my children looking through the waist level viewfinder, and it was like, I had to go the opposite direction that they were running, and then I was starting to get nauseated. That was not the camera for me, though. I love a lot of the photos people take with it. So then I got a Pentax 6.7, and that was a little more intuitive, because just, you know, giant 35 millimeter, basically. And
big SLR.
Like getting bigger, slowly getting bigger and bigger.
And that camera has like the best shutter sound of any camera. Just that, like,
it does.
Really?
It means business.
So chunky.
It does. Yeah. You're not sneaking up on anybody with that one. But then I got pretty quickly, you know, I had started developing, because of the rate I shoot. Cool. It's not feasible financially to have it developed by somebody. So I just, really, you know, I was into developing, into the film thing, and gradually stopped shooting as much digital. And then I made the leap to large format, which seemed really scary at the time. Like, I remember looking at it and thinking, like, this, I don't know how to do this. I made like a list of steps and tried to like kind of get a system for myself. But it was immediately the right camera for me, like, just that's how I think. And it was you know, the first pictures were exactly what I wanted them to be, and everything was just It just seemed easy, which sounds ridiculous considering how, you know, convoluted the process is. But
yeah,
but it was the thing I was drawn to. And yeah,
man. And here we are.
I know.
Yeah.
I wanted to. So there's a lot of things I want to go over, especially, you know, the choice of the camera, the choice of the black and white.
Yeah.
How did you, I mean, we heard the story about how you found large format, but what draws you to black and white? What is it about black and white that you feel best expresses your work?
Sure. Well, when I shot digital, I processed things in black and white a lot. Or if I did do color, I felt like it had to have a reason to be color, that the color was part of the story, or there were just a couple of colors in that were prominent. I would get kind of sort of overwhelmed or distracted by too much color in my pictures. I think I've just always really liked black and white. I like the simplicity. I like the way that because there isn't color, I feel like emotion comes out more. In portraits, it's just, I mean, and people can take beautiful color portraits that have tons of emotion too. But for my work, I feel like the emotion shows a little bit more for some reason, I guess, because you're not looking at, you know, all the different shades of colors in there. But
wow. No, that's so true.
And I can develop C41 and everything, but wow, it's a hassle sometimes. And I prefer just the simplicity of developing black and white. And yeah.
That's so true, though. I feel like it does really make it, black and white really hones in on, you're not, I get so distracted. And I spent the last year or two maybe shooting color. And I'm a black and white guy. Like, I've been shooting black and white and so 100% into it. It's like what I see, as everybody says, you know, I see in black and white. And I'm one of those people. Yeah. And then I was like, well, I want to give this color thing a try and really try to figure it out. And it's just too noisy. It's too distracting. I feel like I don't get that. I don't know what to call it. Like, there's something that shooting black and white. And it simplifies everything, too, I feel like. And not to make it sound like the work is simple. It's just like it takes a lot of the stress for me out of it. So I totally
absolutely.
And with large format too, color's ridiculously expensive. I mean, the film is just
crazy. Insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I have it, you know, I have it in my film fridge, and I once in a while break it out thinking this situation really calls for it. but then I'm just like, oh, I don't know. And it's like what you were saying, you know, you've got your background and you're looking at, like, as you're composing, you're like, okay, this is what's happening here. If you're only thinking this is a bright thing that's going to draw the eye in the background, that's great. That's easy. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking like, oh, we've got all these colors, it's a lot. I don't know. It's just not how I think.
Plus, if you know your work, it's like, I love shooting color. So
yeah.
Not that I shoot black and white as well, and I do love black and white, but you never want to be in a situation where you're like, damn, why did I load color? You know?
Yeah.
Like, you want to be, you know, you're like photographing your subjects and, you know, not regretting your choice. You know, it's like, be true to yourself, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's the large format thing. I've recently tried to get into it, and talking about like the process and like the checklist and I realized you have to have a lot of patience, you know, the patience, not even just for the process. I mean, yes, but also like, I mean, shooting film, right? We have to like go and drop it off and wait for it to, well, unless you're developing, I don't develop at home. So I usually bring it to a lab. So it's just that from beginning to end, it's like such a long process can be. And I'm like, I've always thought I was a patient person, and not, you know, shooting large format, I'm like, am I crazy?
Like, large format is,
you really,
like,
have to slow down.
It's a different, and that's one of the things I love about it. I mean, I was attracted to it because it was the kind of picture I wanted to make. But then once I started shooting it, the actual process is so, it's so good for me. Like, I need that in my day. I don't do it
like
every
therapy,
day.
Right?
I try to, but it's like to have that reset of just being mindful. You know, you're right there with the camera. You're like, just everything kind of narrows down to what's on the ground glass, and it's not all the other stuff that's going on. My mind is always talking in my head. Like, I'm always thinking, and I can't stop.
Same here.
And
same
so.
Here.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting, right? It's like,
it is. Yep.
Need a break. And mm-hmm. when you're so focused on something, it's awesome.
I like that, the idea of that being like the Zen yeah. part of your day. Like, I'm going to go meditate, yeah. quote unquote.
Exactly.
By taking some large format photos.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good
I have
way
it
to look
on
at it.
My to do list every day, you know, that I'm going to, you know, go for a walk, and I'm going to do the like exercises I have to do to keep my back strong to carry my camera. And
oh yeah, jeez, seriously,
shoot or print. Because if I do those things, I can get a little. I just feel like I can manage better with everything else going on. It's like, oh, okay, I can handle my anxiety if I've got that reset. And it's just so beautiful, you know, when you see things like upside down and backwards and it's glowing yep. and the whole thing Agreed. Is just yeah. so absorbing.
That's really good advice too. I feel like for every shooter to make it like make a checklist of like, I'm going to shoot one photo today, whatever yeah. it is, or like one thing, I'm going to look at one photo book today, or I'm going to look, right. you know, to like keep it part of your life. Because it's yeah. so easy to get in a rut and then to just be like, well, I don't even have time. So, like, what's the big deal? Oh, who am I, you know? But yeah. to like, have it as, okay, I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to read a chapter of a book. I'm going
right.
to take one photo a day. It's, like, really good. I feel like I'm making my list already in my head. So Kate.
I think that's especially important with kids. I mean, I'm sure it's important for everybody, yeah. but, like.
That's why I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. Yeah.
You can lose all of the time for you until the end of the day yes. when you're just exhausted and the kids are in bed, but you're tired and you don't have
yeah.
anything to take care of yourself. And if you don't take care of yourself, like I've learned this because my eldest kid is on the spectrum. Mm. So, you know, I started out when he was really little, really focused on, you know, helping him with therapy and doing lots of things with that. And then the photography became a way for us to connect. But it also became a way for me to have some self-care that kept me sane,
yeah.
which has been really wow. important yeah. for me.
Wow, Kate. I love it. I mean, just that quote right there, like, photography is self-care.
It really is.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. whatever it is for anybody out there, but, like, to hear those yeah. words, like, is really resonating, so.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I can totally tell it, when my mental illness is kind of dropping because of, you know, it's been 100 degrees out for the last couple of days here where I can't, you know, get out and do my walk on my before work right. or on my days off or something like that. Like, I can yeah. really feel the mental pull when I'm not using my Absolutely. Brain like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets really hard. And I mean, that seasonal aspect of it, it's sort of reversed here in Minnesota. The winter, you know, when it's like 20 below, yeah. I'm just like, no.
What do you do in the winter?
Yeah, 40 is like, that's the cutoff for your hand still working to adjust the knobs on the camera.
Jeez.
Yeah, but it does get bleak when you don't, you know, when you haven't been shooting for a while or you can't do those things to take care of yourself. I don't know. It's just, photography is so much, it's so many things, but that's one of the things I think it is for a lot of people. It's just being able to reconnect with yourself, and it's a part of your identity, and... Yeah,
absolutely. So what do you do in the winter? Do you do like any studio work then? Do you like drag folks in the studio?
Yeah.
Like, it's too cold out. We're going to go inside.
Right. Well, I do it in my house. You know, I have.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last time I redecorated, I had it in mind. Like, I need a black wall and I need like a light colored wall. And so by the biggest windows, I've got those. And then I just take the pictures off the walls and then I can use them as a background. And
that's perfect.
But I get bored in the winter doing studio type stuff or doing, right. you know, sometimes I occasionally rent a studio, but mostly just in my house or in friends' houses, anywhere that we can that's interesting enough. I get tired of the same background, same people, which are the same people I photograph all the time. But it's like not being able to have the context of what's happening in the environment around somebody or how somebody's connected to nature. I get a little stuck that way. But I try to use it as a way to experiment with something. One time a few years ago, it was just as the pandemic was hitting and the election was ramping up, and it was like just a crazy anxious time. I did a bunch of static shock photos of myself. Like, I did these self-portraits on ortho film, and then I took them in the darkroom, and I got this like thing off of Amazon where you can generate a static shock, and like, what? You crank it up, whoa, and it shocked the film, which made, like, you know how you don't want static normally because so I was doing it on purpose, and that was like, sometimes I try to do something like that if I can, and it's really that's energizing, but it's hard to find.
Yeah. I was thinking experimenting like, oh, dragging the shutter, but you're like, no, I electrocuted
Yeah. Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah,
that's amazing. How do they come out? Was it cool?
It was fun. It was a while ago. I mean, it's probably like three or 4 years ago, but yeah, it was really cool. I loved having a project at that time of year, and I liked how they turned out.
Yeah.
It was fun. But really, anything like that, I buy cheap film, and I don't hesitate to waste it. That's generally it. But it's also not 200 or 300 shots a day like it was with digital, because large format film is a lot more expensive. But
yeah, that's also really good advice too for anybody who wants to get into large format. It's always daunting when you're like, okay, a box of whatever is $100 for how many sheets, you know, like to buy cheap film.
Buy it cheap.
Go for it.
Foam a pan. Yeah, that's my go-to. I feel like, you know, the other thing to think about is, like, people look at the box and they're like, oh my God, you know, that's like some astronomical price, right? Like, you know, I think it was like $50 when I started, and I sort of, in my mind, I still pretend it is, but it's not.
You have to.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, like, if you think of it like by the box, you're like, oh my God, how could I, you know, how can I waste money like this? But then if you think, like, I'm going to shoot 6, and that's like a roll, and it's not that different price wise than a roll. So,
yeah. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you about your style of photography, because looking through your work and your Instagram, you can just see it's very cohesive. Was that something that you were kind of doing when you were shooting digital, or did you really come alive, you know, when you got into large format and you were able to use like those movements of the lens and stuff like that? Because, I mean, I look at your photos and it's just...
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Thanks, you guys. That's nice. So when I was shooting digital, I was sort of finding my voice as a photographer. I wanted to define a style for myself. So I remember sitting, I think my kids were in school and I was waiting for them, and I was at Starbucks. And I was like, I am going to make a list of the qualities, of 5 qualities I want to have in my photo, every photo I take, and this will be my style. And I can't remember all 5 of them, but some were like an interesting use of light and shadow, or emotion, or sensory detail, something that's going to draw the reader in. It's like, I'm talking like a writer. The viewer in. And so I had that. I sort of started to get my head around it while I was shooting digital, but I always liked selective focus anyway. I liked really shallow depth of field. As long as I've been shooting in an artistic way, that's been something that I've been drawn to. But then when I started doing large format, it's the best, right? I mean, it's like,
it's
because you can control a plane of focus, so it's not just what's in focus from the film. It you can shift it, and you can do swings and tilts, and I try to have a couple things in focus in a shot with everything else out of focus, shooting it wide open, so you have like a little bit of a story, maybe, if, you know, in a perfect world, you've got some kind of detail that's going to add to the story of the photo. So you've got the person and the detail. And then I do use camera movements to get both of those. So it kind of became, it was a natural tool for me, because I already liked having that shallow depth of field thing. And I already was really interested in, you know, quiet sensory photos that, it just, large format's really natural for that.
two questions.
Yeah.
Are you like self-taught in large format? Did you take any workshops or anything like that?
No, self-taught.
The second part was like, regardless if you're self-taught now, do you see yourself teaching this stuff to people? Because I feel like all of the little gems you've given us just in this conversation could really bode well to like a large format class. Like, I want to come and take your large format class. Because I struggle a lot with composition with large format. I'm always like, okay, we'll put the person straight in the middle. We'll do like a headshot. And then I get it back. I'm like, this is cool, but it's boring, you know?
Yeah, that's hard, right? I mean, and that happens to me too sometimes. Like, I'll take one and I'm just like, oh, you know, that just does not, it's not a thing, that picture. And that's, some pictures are like that. I mean, I do feel like I would love more people to shoot large format and realize that it's not as intimidating as it can seem. I mean, people look at it and they're like, oh, you know, big old fashioned camera, dark cloth. You can't see what you're photographing when you're doing the actual photo. And I really wish people understood that it's not hard. It's a process. But once you have started your checklist of steps, it's just a different way of thinking. And I don't think everybody, it's for everybody, but I think it's for more people than realize they could do it. So I would love to do something that made it more accessible to people. At the same time, I don't consider myself especially technical with it. I mean, I can talk lenses and all of that, but I don't follow the rules very well with it. So like, you look at the old message boards and they're like, you know, oh, well, I did, you know, X degrees of tilt. And like, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, I will look through the ground glass and I tilt and I'm like, oh, that's not the right way. And then I tilt the other way and I just kind of dial it in.
Right.
I'm not thinking like I need to do a forward tilt here or even. It's just, it's by feel. So I don't know how well I would teach. I mean, I can teach the basic process, but I don't think I could. I think people would have a lot of questions like, I don't know, that I might not be, I don't know.
No, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
It's just, I mean, for me, it's personal.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like even that, like, it could be like an intro class, right? Yeah. Where you're like, I'm going to teach you the basics. Sure. I'm going to teach you how to go over all the basic stuff.
Yeah.
But helping people cross that first bridge and like get into it, I think is going to open the floodgates for people.
No, I think that's true. I mean, I've actually been doing some reels, like I've been dabbling in reels, which is, I just started doing this because I don't like, you know, a couple of years ago, they're like, everything on Instagram is going to be reels. I'm like, whatever. That's not me.
I know. I was like,
video.
Same.
But then I just started, I don't know, a few weeks ago, I was like, you know, I want to show what the joy of this process is and let people know that it is not hard to do it once you get going. And so I've been trying to put some of that out there just for fun to,
I love it,
to help people understand that. But the thing with large format is there are so many ways to do anything. It has a million possibilities. From the beginning to the end of the process and, you know, how you print it, how you, everything, right? And there are so many ways that you can do something. I only know the way I do it. And it works for me, but it doesn't mean that it would be the right way for other people. But
Do you print your work? Are you also doing that?
I just started doing that like maybe 6 months ago. So I have a dark room. For a long time, I used this half bathroom in our house, and I completely trashed it because I did wet plate in there too. fortunately, like everyone else in my family was just like, "That's not. We don't count that as a bathroom in our house anymore because it's not accessible to us."
I love it.
So I did that. I worked in there in this, like, you know, I had like 3 feet of counter space for a long time. But now I have a dark room and I've been printing and, really getting into that. That's been, amazing. And I still have a ton to learn there, which is, I love having something to learn. I love, that's the thing also about large format is you can't, you don't run out of things that you need to learn still, which is awesome. It's energizing.
Man, totally. So are you doing like contact prints or do you have an enlarger? How are you going about doing the large format stuff?
Yeah, I have a 4x5 enlarger. And I've done a couple contact prints of 8x10. I shoot 8x10 sometimes.
Okay.
It's more of everything, right? Like more of the harder parts of large format, like the, you know, it's 13 pounds versus 6 for the camera. And so it gets to be physically a lot. And then, you know, film is 4 times as expensive. And that's, so I don't have an 8x10 enlarger, but.
Do you see a huge difference, though, in like from 4x5 to 8x10? Yeah. Like, is there a.
I no, don't.
Not seeing much of it.
No, okay. I mean, so people. So that's. Some people will totally disagree with me on that. I expected there to be a difference. And there is, there can be, right? Like in the fall off of the focus, you can get, it can be more dramatic with 8x10, which I love that. But it's not, it's basically just a giant 4x5.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. I wanted to ask you one more thing about your process of your day to day.
Sure.
Does inspiration hit you where you're like, oh my God, I gotta go, I want to put my son here with this person and I want to do that like Tuesday? Or is it more so like, okay, let's go see what we can make today? Or is it maybe a combination of both?
It's both. Yeah. Keep a list of ideas on my phone and just jot things down. Like if I don't sleep especially well. So I get up in the middle of the night and write down the ideas and then go back to bed. And sometimes that helps. So I keep the list and I feel like I feel like I'm doing really well if I get to do, 25-30% of the ideas, because life is crazy. Then the other part of it is sometimes I don't have something that's going to work. I don't have an idea that's going to work for that time, but I have to take a picture that day to take care of myself. Yeah. So I just do it. And that ends up being, sometimes those end up great. Like you just, or sometimes it's like, oh, I took a picture of the cat and the cat moved. but I did my picture. It just depends on the day. Some of what I do, my older son loves rivers and waterfalls and anything like any moving water. And so we go on little expeditions, or we did this a lot for many years, but we still do it sometimes where he can be like looking at the water and the nature in the area. And I can be taking pictures of him enjoying that. And those aren't really planned, but they do work really well for me because it's, kid time. You're doing the parenting thing and you feel like you're doing some quality time, but you're also still getting, you're not like, it's not mind numbing. Like, watching back when they were little, like with the matchbox cars and they're just like driving the matchbox car and you're like, this is my life.
Invigorating.
Yeah.
That's great. One more question about that.
So
if you're shooting a photo a day, are you somebody that, gets excited, like the kids are in bed, I'm going to go develop? Or do you like, okay, Saturdays is my develop day, and do you develop the week's worth of?
Mostly. So I shoot every day. I try to shoot every day. And when I get 6, so that I use a Mod 54 in a Patterson tank for my developing. Got so it. It's 6 sheets. Yeah. And that's sort of what I count as like a batch. But I also regularly shoot 6. So like if we're going to go out to do something, I'll go to the river or my parents are coming over, I like to take pictures of my parents also, then I'll shoot 6 photos and I will right away develop them. It's like same day photo lab.
Right.
They're in bed or like they're getting ready for bed because now they're old enough that you can be like, okay, it's time to get ready for bed. And then I'm going to go do this developing and take 20 minutes. Right. Then they eat them dry and we're good.
So do you just scan them kind of to see what they are before you print, or are you just printing right away to get the full effect?
Well, I scan pretty much everything first. I mean, because I've only really had printing as part of my workflow for 6 months.
Okay.
If I see something that really I'm really happy with, I'll take a photo of it with my phone, a photo of the negative, and then invert it and be like, okay, yeah, this is going to work. And then I have occasionally printed directly from it then, but most of the time I scan. I had that hybrid workflow for such a long time that it's natural for me to, you know, just the next morning when they're dry. Sometimes if you could wait, right? Like sometimes you're like, oh, this is, I'm really excited. Uh-huh. then you have to be like irresponsible and you scan it when it's like maybe a little damp still. Yeah.
Been there.
I dry my negatives with a blow dryer because I couldn't wait.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard, the waiting is a hard part of the process, especially because.
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up with film, right? And you take it in and it mm-hmm. would be, you'd have to wait mm-hmm. to get it back. And mm-hmm. but then there's digital and, you know, you shoot digital for a while and you're like, you want that instant gratification. And then
spoiled.
That's film also and, a patient. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's part of the patience we were talking about, right? Like it's a patience at every turn. Like now you got to wait for the negative to dry.
Right.
That's my favorite, though. I love waiting. Not really, but I do. There's a part of it that's like the anticipation. It's like a Christmas morning, every batch of film that you get to scan and look at, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's so true. It's like that moment of the first moment you get to see it, you know, wherever that is in the process. Like for me, it's usually I'm pulling it out of the tank, and I hold them up and look. And
yep.
Or like.
Yeah. Such a great feeling.
Mm. Yeah. And it's the best when you have one that you don't know if it's going to work and it really shouldn't work. Like, you know, I take these pictures that are like, that's not going to work. You know, kid is sitting in a hammock swing, moving, and I've got, you know, a quarter inch of depth of field. And I've got focus. Yeah. I'm like, are you holding still? And they're like, yeah. And you're like, hitting the shutter and they're like moving at the moment that you're like, there's no way. And then you pull it out of the tank and it's like, hey, that worked. there's just the miracle of it.
Oh, man. It's getting me so excited.
I know. Bottle that feeling, you know?
Yeah. That element of chance. I mean, like, you know, we talk about gamifying things in the world and film photography is that. It's like, it might work, it might not work. But if it does and it wasn't supposed to, it's like extra awesome.
Totally.
Totally. Yeah. Or like when you're like, well, underexpose that, that's going to look like crap. And you're like, actually, that's a mood. That looks really cool. What a vibe. Like,
It's
the best thing about film photography.
It's amazing. It and all those little unexpected miracles and the things you can't control. That's the part, the magic part of it that,
I have a story about not controlling things. I was shooting my son at the farmer's market this weekend, and he was eating a popsicle. And I didn't realize he was like touching, like he touched the lens. And I was like, oh, okay. But I'm looking through the viewfinder, so I can't see that the lens is like got mango popsicle slime all over it. So I'm going to see if that turned out or not later today when I drop off the film.
I bet it did. I mean, how opaque was the mango slime?
It was pretty, I'm not sure. It was like on the edge of like maybe not being a problem.
But it could be,
so we'll see.
It could be that kind of cool blur too. It's just.
Yeah.
My lenses are gross. Like I'm not fastidious about anything. Which is not a characteristic that most large format photographers have, but it so many things work out.
That's
even
life,
with a
though,
lot
right?
of slime on them. It works out fine. So.
I know. Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Did you ever get into any of the Polaroid, like instant 4x5 or 8x10 stuff? Do you shoot any instant with those? Or
I haven't. I mean, that's the thing. I haven't really explored. Like, one of my friends has that Lomo Graflock back where you can put. So I've seen her do a couple with it, but I've never tried. And I don't know. Like, it would be interesting to see.
Yeah, I just wonder, because like I was completely obsessed with Polaroid's Type 55 film, like the film that was made for 4x5, like the peel apart stuff.
So gorgeous.
Oh, and it's funny. I was gifted two boxes, and I probably told the story a million times on this podcast, but I was gifted two boxes and I shot it like it was, you know, nothing. I just went through and I was like taking pictures of the stupid stuff. And because I didn't know that it was gone. I just assumed that it was still around. And I was running around like, oh, yeah. And then I go to order more and it's like $350 for a box of it. And I'm like, what? Ew. What did I just do?
It's just another learning experience.
Regret.
100%. Yep.
No, I came into shooting large format just as that became like astronomically expensive. And so I never really got to play with it. And I love what people get with it. And I know people who still have a little bit in the freezer and, you know, it's amazing. But yeah, I've never gotten to try.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Listeners, if you want to send a box.
We'll all take one or two.
We'll all take one. Not just Kate, us too.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Kate right after this message from our sponsor.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We develop some film, we talk shop, we laugh. We also try to get a former guest for these. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks. All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. This week's listener is a former guest and amazing photographer, Sarah Stiletto. She wanted to know, you make such beautiful work. Is your end goal to document your life for your family, or do you want to share your work more widely than that? Such a great question.
Mm-hmm. That is an amazing question. And I love Sarah's work. I love it. Like, Sarah and I have sort of similar wavelength. with large format photography.
Totally.
I really relate to her and her work. And that question is one that I have asked myself a ton of times. I get a lot of comments on my work, and I have for years gotten comments like, you know, your kids are going to love these someday. These are going to, everybody's going to look back on these. And I feel like there is something a little bit disingenuous in putting that forward myself, in me putting that forward, because I'm not always doing it for that. I that's really important to me, the sort of legacy. I feel a responsibility to preserve who people are. Like when I was looking at my great grandma's photos that she had taken, and that sort of preserves the story of who these people are. And I don't like letting go of that. I don't like letting go of who somebody is after they've died. I tell their stories. To my kids and my nieces, I try to talk about like my grandparents and keep them alive in some way. And I feel like photos are a really big part of that. So that's really important to me. But also there is another element to what I do that is not about capturing the moment or preserving the moment. It's also about my voice and what I want to communicate. So a lot of what I do is also trying to have a dialogue with the person viewing my photo. You know, I feel like connecting with them is really important to me, and what they bring to it changes what I create. Changes their view of what I create. And so I want that, and I want the story too, but they're not always both present in every picture. Some pictures are just the story, just for me, and they don't necessarily do well on Instagram, or might not get into a show. You know, those are a different kind of photo, and they're just as important to me. But the photos that do both, that tell the story of my family and that my kids might look back on someday, and also connect to a larger audience, those are the ones that's what I'm really aiming for. I don't know.
Seems to me like you're an artist and your subjects just happen to be your family, right?
Yeah.
So yes, you're documenting, you know, them getting bigger and stuff like that, which is important in its own right. But I feel like that's not, like you just said, that's not the whole reason why you do what you do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think your work definitely speaks for that.
Oh, good. Yeah, good. I mean, I feel like some of the photos I do are not representing who they are, like who my kids are or who my parents are. Mm-hmm. And they're not, you know, they're not representing a story, but they are saying who I am. So I think every photo we take is a little bit a self-portrait, and
wow,
and we just are trying to show our voice and share our perspective with other people doing that, and it can mean a lot of different things.
It's just so crazy to think like the work of Sally Mann, you know what I mean?
Or I was going to say how very Sally Mann.
Like it's mind-blowing that you can take like a family portrait, or, and I'm saying that as like the whole body of work, you know what I mean? Like a whole body of work of that, and just how much you can say with something like that. It's so crazy to think. It still blows my mind of how relatable the photos are, like the moods, the photography's crazy that we can do that, you know, from a photograph. Like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. It's a powerful, powerful thing. And I think that as humans, you know, we sort of are programmed to see something of ourselves in everything we look at. We need to relate to it. And if a photo is going to work and be something that people can relate to, it has to be, it has to speak to something like that, you know, like their childhood or their their experience with love or sadness or longing or anything. I don't know.
Totally get it. And it just takes me back to what you said at the very beginning of, like, you hate calling it a hobby because it's so much more than that. It's just so much more than that. And, you know, it's that they don't get it. Like, I've said it a couple times of where, you know, most people think a photo is like what you ate for dinner or a place that you visited, you know, like they can't comprehend like the pull of what it's like to be a person that loves to make images and has like I don't know where I was going with that, but I don't know. It's hard for me to comprehend not another way, you know, like another way of looking at things because it's weird. It's such a weird
part of how
thing.
And I think you know, people expect photography to be, even from the very beginnings of photography as an art, there was this struggle for photography to be seen as art and not as science. And, you know, because it's not just a representation of what the real world is, it's our interpretation of that. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's not, so calling it a hobby is like, you know, knitting is a hobby, right?
I mean,
But a hobby is not, it's not your identity, and photography becomes your identity. Right. It's how you see, especially analog photography, because it's so hands-on and so personal that,
I got a lot to think about today.
I know. I'm going to... Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we'll give you the camera question. So it's a two-part camera question. First part is the desert island. Is there a camera that, you know, you just cannot live without? It's your ride or die camera. Like, it's going to the desert island with you. You can only take one. What's it gonna be and why?
Yeah, my Zone 6 4x5 wood field camera, made in Vermont in the 80s. It's a perfect camera. Beautiful. It's the perfect, like, I don't need any other camera. I mean, I have other cameras, but I will shoot that camera the rest of my life. Like, it's a perfect camera. Wow.
Man, what's your favorite focal length? What do you use the most lens-wise?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I mostly shoot a 150. When I first got into large format photography, I got a couple of lenses. I got a 210 modern lens, Rodin stock, and then modern in quotation marks. It's, you know, nothing really that new. I also got a Schneider Zenar made in 1938. And at the time I bought it, you know, it wasn't cheap. Or, I mean, it was cheap. Now they're more. But it wasn't supposed to be like a great lens. Nobody really heard of it. And I just wanted a fast vintage normal focal length, so that's a, you know, like a 50 on 35mm.
Yeah,
so that's still my favorite lens. I shoot it all the time. I have an Arriwactar and stuff like that, but I just really like that lens. I like that focal length. I like wider too. I don't have a wide angle for 4x5, but
I always shoot a 105 has been my favorite for a while. I have a 105 Fujinon lens, and I've always been a wide, pretty wide, you know, at least 35 millimeters, maybe 28. I just love getting up into it. Like, I love being right there, and it really, there's something about it. But I was just curious, just looking at your work again, just being like, what is she using? What is what? Because, you know, of course, gear is all that matters when it comes down.
Right.
Not at all. But not at all.
No. Great, you know.
It's about this whole conversation.
Right? Love, yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. All right, so we'll give you part two. Is there, we call it the white whale. Is there anything out there that, you know, you've always wanted to try? You're kind of like looking on eBay and Facebook Marketplace. Is there anything out there that you've had your eye on that you just haven't had a chance to play around with yet?
Yes. So it actually goes with what we were talking about just a second ago. So I would really like a wide angle lens for 4x5, but I have a really specific thing I want, and I don't think it exists. But if anybody hears of it existing, do message me because I would like to know. But it would be something that allows for movements, is a wide angle, and is old, and is in a shutter. So I have a speed graphic, and I shoot lenses not in a shutter sometimes on that, but yeah. I want access to all the movements because I use them. So I don't like being limited where that's concerned. So I guess the dream thing for me is like a 105-ish f4.5, f3.5, but it covers 4x5, I don't think it exists, because when they were making these vintage lenses, that focal length would have been considered more of a landscape lens and wouldn't need to be as fast. And so I like fast lenses, and
right.
Yeah. Man, well, we're putting it out there in the universe.
Yeah, we're putting it out there, yeah. But it's buried in somebody's attic or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Anything else, Chris? Anything?
No, I mean, this has been, what an inspiring episode. Yeah. Thank you for all the gems that you've shared with us. I already said I'm making my list in my head for my photography as self-care. So
yeah,
thank you so
absolutely.
Much. Where can everybody check out your work? What do you want to plug? Instagram? You have a website? Where can we?
Yeah, Instagram mainly. Just Kate Miller Wilson on Instagram. I've got an old Flickr that I have
Flickr
recently. Yeah, I know. Wasn't Flickr the best?
So good. I still pay for it. I'm like one of the only people that pays for it still. Oh, okay, good. I'm not the only one. Thank you.
And I'm like, why am I doing this? But then I just recently, like this week, I started thinking about like all those things that we don't, like the reject photos that we don't post on Instagram, because it doesn't go with, you know, the image, right? Of like, this is my work.
Yep.
And I had a bunch of self-portraits. I take tons of self-portraits, and I was like, why don't I put some of those out there? And so I'm putting them on my Flickr, which is also Kate Miller Wilson.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Love that.
That's great. Okay, Timothy, where are you?
Guys, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube, at Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of videos that I used to make on YouTube. Search bar, Timothy Makeups. You guys know where it is. That's it for me. Oh, wait, timothymakeups.com too. And then, Chris, where are you?
I am Crispy Photo on all the things, Threads, YouTube, Instagram. We are Analog Talk Pod on Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram and Threads.
Yay.
And that's it. Kate, thank you again. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You inspired me to try again with large format, so thank you so much.
There we go. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. It was awesome talking with you guys.
All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye. All right. That's going to wrap up this episode. Chris and I want to thank Kate for coming on the show. What beautiful, amazing work. Guys, go to her Instagram. Check out her work. Check out her Flickr. Great, great stuff. Kate, thanks so much for taking the time to hang out with us. We can't wait to see what the future holds. You're amazing. Guys, it's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk for only $1. $1. You can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hang over there and a bunch of stuff in the archives. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. And for the patrons who already support the show, guys, we love you. We don't know what we would do without you. And, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Kate, thanks again for taking the time to hang out. Again, your work is
beautiful.
All right. So until next time, we'll see you with an all-new episode soon. All right, guys. Later.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.